then there would be a significant hole in the 09-11 budget, assuming that the legislature wanted to keep that funding at that particular level. So what the co-chairs are trying to do here is to limit the expenditures in 07-09 to about $12.7 million, which is above what they are today in the 05-07, but also retain some of that money in the Oregon Project Independence Fund so it could be used in future biennia, most particularly in 09-11. That's the rationale behind that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon. Representative Morgan.
Thank you. I would just like to put on record at this point that the Senior and Disability Caucus does not support the funding of OPI through the Senior Property Tax Deferral Account. They would rather see the funding come out of general fund. And that's recognizing that the governor made a different choice, and the co-chairs have also made a different choice. But want to put that on record. And their concern is about sustainability, yeah. And that is why they would prefer to see general fund dollars going towards support of Oregon Project Independence.
Thank you. Go, go, go.
Well, I remember it slightly differently because I introduced the bill last time that would put that money from the senior fund. And that was billed as an enhancement. It wasn't billed as a replacement for general fund money, and I am very upset that we are not putting some general fund money in to enhance that program. It's terrible. And you know what that tells me is anytime you get a dedicated source of funding, you can almost count on general fund being removed, and that is a dishonest way of dealing with the budget. Mm-hmm. It's billed as an enhancement, and then suddenly the general fund is gone. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking forward to a robust discussion on this funding source for this program, and I'm sure that it will come up in the course of this budget being worked. But we need to take a look at, I think as Representative Nathanson was very clear and made a great point, that we need to look at the growth that we can expect in the program and then how this revenue source looks against that growth. But I would really hesitate to put this program entirely back into general funding because general fund is the most volatile source of revenue that you can get involved with, and it's all subject to the vagaries of the political process also. So I think that, you know, this, without wasting a lot of time on the discussion right now, because there will be a time to have it, that we need to be very mindful of the need to have people that rely on this program feel that they aren't going to have the rug pulled out from under them every time we take these budgets on.
Is there a hand up here? Representative Quartet, Representative Nathanson? Okay. And then after Senator Winters, we need to move on.
Madam Chair, I just think that I want to piggyback on what the good Senator Marcet said, that the intent was not of the property tax deferral account was not to replace general fund, and I would have to agree with him. And it seems as though every session we have this discussion about whether or not we're going to fund OPI. And it's kind of interesting to me that our senior population in Oregon and those who depend upon it has not decreased. If anything, the population is increasing. And the other thing I hope we all think about and consider is that the cost ratio with keeping an individual in their own home, we get a much better bang for your buck, if you will, than when we do institutionalization. So as we discuss the pros and cons, I want to keep in mind what the good senator here and the legislation that was passed last session, that the intent was not to replace but to enhance. Senator. I'm calling you Senator.
Senator
You wouldn't have that job.
The next line item in the co-chair's adjustments is the area agency on aging equity down to 90%. In the governor's budget, it was at 95%. This would take it down to 90%, about $2.7 million general fund less. The co-chairs did not want to make or to fund the Home Care Commission in terms of its independence. This was funded in the governor's budget, and you can see the adjustment for moving $159,000 of general fund.
Ma'am.
Senator Marcia.
It seems to me the co-chairs pulled $2,667 out of the equity.
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, yes. They
well,
did.
It's not 90%. What is it? What percent are we down to, 50?
No, Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, this will take the equity to 90%, and it is something less than that today. So rather than to 95%, this adjustment does provide about $3.1 million of increase in terms of reimbursement for the area agencies on aging, and this would take them to 90% rather than to 95%. So the total funding was on the first page about $5.8 million general fund along with match. The funding now, if you remove the $2.7 million, is $3.1 million. So this gets them to 90%.
So that does get them to 90%.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Thank you.
The co-chairs did not fund OHP standard expansion. We talked about that yesterday in terms of the health services. Thus, the $340,000 of tobacco tax is removed from this budget. And finally, the co-chairs restored the Eastern Oregon Training Center by adding back the $1.1 million of general fund and associated match. The difference between the co-chair's budget and the governor's budget is a general fund increase of about $1.6 million. Other funds decrease $4.3 million. Federal funds increase of about $3.7 million. And with that, I'm going to turn to my colleague, Sheila Baker, and we can continue with department-wide support services.
Thank you, Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm on the page starting department-wide support services. There's a lot of lines on this page. I won't go over all of them because generally, as the central administrative function of the department, much of what happens in the governor's budget and in the co-chair's budget reflects what's happened in the various program areas. So I won't go through those in laborious detail. But if you start at the top, you can see the 05-07 legislatively approved budget, $138 million general funds, $419 million total funds. The essential budget level, a significant increase both in general and total funds due to inflation, state government service charge increases, particularly the centralized data center project, rent increases, phase-in of the Medicaid management information systems project costs, and then services and supplies increases at the central level based on program caseload increases out in the fields and the various program areas. So there's a significant increase related to those items there. Then the policy packages in the governor's budget, package 84, again, roll-up of the December 2006 Emergency Board actions. Package 101, Children's Health and Safety, generally represents centralized costs such as rent, office expenses, expendable property, buying desks, computers, furniture, et cetera, for staff that's added in the various program areas and these various program elements in the policy option package. So that totals about $1.2 million general fund and $3.9 million federal funds. Package 103 similarly are central department-wide support services costs based on the program packages related to Oregon Health Plan, the Emergency Medical Trauma System. Package 104, access to mental health care. Again, much of that is related to what's happening in health services. I did want to call your attention to the last element in that package, 104-46. You can see there are other funds of $3.2 million. What that is certificates of participation revenues. So there are other funds revenues. This is the start planning, developing the data project that supports the new Oregon State Hospital. So there was some discussion on that yesterday in health services, but the actual information technology piece of it, development of the system, is in this budget. And I think what is important to keep in mind here is that this is basically just a down payment on that system at this point. As Representative Nathanson has indicated, you know, there's not a total cost that's available until they develop the system and get more specifications. We don't know what the cost will be, but this is the initial funding for that project. Package 105, again, central administrative costs related to the prevention, preparedness, and health promotion package, mostly in health services. And then moving over to the top of the next page, package 106 contains both central administrative costs for efficiencies in other areas of the department, as well as some initiatives that department-wide support services is the lead on. So, for example, you've seen in the other program areas some general fund savings from element 106-55, the Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery, beefing up those collections, beefing up the payment reviews there. There is a cost here for that staffing, as you can see, but there are offsetting savings, and there's a net general fund savings across the department from that additional staffing in DWSS. 106-56, actuarial and caseload forecasting, shows a savings. There's two major elements to this particular line item. One is that the agency proposes to stop using their third-party actuary that does the work for the Oregon Health Plan in terms of determining the rate structure and the actuarial issues regarding the Oregon Health Plan. They would instead add in-house staff to do that, and they project that they will save a considerable amount of money through doing that. They also propose to expand their caseload forecasting capacity so that they are able to do more, I guess I would call it what-if kind of modeling. What if we made this policy change? What might be the impact on program caseloads? Can we do a longer trend analysis than we currently do, so that they would be able to, in addition to the improvements they've already made to their forecasting unit, they would have more capacity to answer a broader range of questions and provide a more thorough analysis of some of those issues. Then I'd point to 106-59 infrastructure investments, $2.7 million general fund and $5.7 million total funds. This is, again, a down payment, if you will, on some additional costs that we would expect to see as a result of this. This is in response to the department's efforts to improve its financial management and oversight. They've been working on that during this biennium very intensively. It adds three high-level positions that are already on board, but it also adds a significant amount of funds for contract services to help the department work through some of those issues, set up processes and practices so that they can continue to improve their financial management. 106-60 is an expansion of their internal audit function. They previously were staffed at a higher level, but in the budget reductions over the last couple bienniums, they have lost some of their internal audit staff. This would add back three of those staff. I believe they have five on board now, and this would increase that by three. And then I'd call your attention to 106-67 at the bottom of this particular section. Again, a down payment, if you will, on future systems work, $2.6 million general fund, $3 or $4 million total funds. This, the work that would be done here would be to get a start on a system that unifies eligibility determination for self-sufficiency programs, so for TANA, food stamps, that kind of thing, instead of the program-specific systems they have now. This would help track individuals and cases across programs so that the department would be better able to serve those individuals. Again, how that system would look and what the ultimate cost of that would be aren't known at this point. This would just get them started on the planning and the requirements definition and started on the process. So the next package that is noteworthy is package 112. This is the debt service related to the Oregon State Hospital Replacement Facilities. And it's noteworthy in a couple of ways. One, you talked in the mental health area discussion about the Oregon State Hospital replacement and the pricing of the governor's budget. We know that pricing will be different in the ultimate budget that's adopted because the assumptions have changed regarding what sites will be used. But this funding assumes the about $82 million of certificates of participation for this biennium. It is not a full biennium's debt service payment. The other part of it that's noteworthy is the $9.8 million other funds. In effect, in the governor's budget, what happened is that the governor used certificates of participation proceeds to capitalize this first biennium's debt service payments on most of those certificates of participation. In effect, borrowing to pay debt service for the first biennium on those certificates of participation. So where in some other agencies you would see general fund only for debt service, in this agency, in this budget, there's an assumption that those other funds for this first biennium would be borrowed. In future biennium, we expect that would be backfilled with general fund, but in this biennium it is capitalized as part of the COP that are issued.
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley?
While we're still on the subject of the Oregon State Hospital, just want to make note again for the record that the co-chair's budget makes some of the necessary choices, investments, and the Oregon State Hospital part of the master plan, but it fails, the co-chair's budget fails to make the necessary investments in community-based programs and services. And that is just deeply disturbing. We're on a path, all the experts, all the mental health experts in the state tell us that this is a setup for failure not to make the front-end investments in community-based services. So I want to make that point before we move forward. This is a point we will need to revisit.
Yes. Before we move on to the, thank you, Madam Chair, on to the co-chair's budget, I just want to clarify, does this include all the field services adjustments for the biennium? I'm just wondering about staffing for some of the, I'm sorry I had to step out for the 101 discussion, but when we talk about any staffing improvements, this is it, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, what is in the department-wide support services budget are the centralized staffing, and so in some cases they have added staff related to various initiatives or program adjustments, but for the most part the staffing, for example, in children, adults, and families, adding staff for child welfare, those positions are in the child welfare budget. But what you see in this particular budget are costs related to rent, office expenses, buying computers for that staff, buying furniture for the staff. So there are both in the essential budget level numbers and in the policy packages, central administrative costs related to the field costs that are in the program budgets.
Thank you. Can I follow up?
Commissioner McCann.
Thank you, and I appreciate the clarification. So the other day when we had the CAF budget for 101, that includes, I just remember in the presentations we had a bit of a bifurcation between the program and the field, but this includes both.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, in the CAF budget, the actual field staffing is in the CAF budget, is in program support, not in the program budget structure. So we're getting deep into budget jargon here, but for example, the self-sufficiency budget includes the payments for the clients. The staff that provides client services is in the program support budget within children, adults, and families. And again, what's in the department-wide support services budget are central administrative costs related to those field staff in the CAF budget.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
Representative Mathis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, before we move on to the co-chair's budget, I'd like to ask if you could remind me, if you have the information there, 106-60, expand internal audits, if you could remind me a little more specifically what that is and whether this is an expenditure that yields any revenues.
Madam Chair and Representative Nathanson, I think that the agency can provide a more thorough description or context for that, but generally my understanding is they have an existing internal audit staff. This would add back some positions that were eliminated during the 0103 and 0305 biennia, and the function of these, it varies depending on where the department thinks it needs to look internally to look at business practices, look at what programs are doing, making sure that things are handled appropriately. It could lead to some savings potentially depending on what was looked at and what the outcomes of those are, but there are no savings identified. I mean, there's no estimate of savings that's identified in this package.
Very quickly, on package 112, the debt service, when the agency comes forward to discuss this with us, would it be possible to ask them to bring us some information that will help us understand what the financial situation is going to be in the outlier bienniums around using COPs to pay that debt service off?
Somebody else looking at that other than me, because I'm trying to keep running all the time. I want to make a point that I don't want lost here, and that is, I don't know whether we heard Senator Gordley or not, but after meeting a lot with people on the issue of mental health, every last one of us as legislators is going to have to pay for this if it happens. We are eroding the infrastructure of mental health in this state, and to go back to it is going to cost so much more than if we would do a better job of funding mental health while we're going through this process. I can't say that enough. It is really, really, really eroding fast. Mm-hmm. And what you do with this information is your business, but I'm telling you that unless we do something to shore up our mental health program system in this state, we're going to be in serious trouble. Ms. Britton.
I mean, Ms. Baker.
Senator Britton, Ms.
I know. Okay.
Can I just emphasize what you just said, Senator Carter? In addition to what we already have out there and what you're talking about in the system, and if we just had what we have out there now, caseload-wise, we'd still be in trouble. Add to that the returning soldiers from the war and the just alarming statistics that we're hearing about their needs when they get here.
Exactly.
Ms. Baker?
There are two of the co-chair's budget adjustments that I want to specifically talk about. The balance of them, I think, have already been discussed in the program areas in terms of what the co-chairs are doing relative to use of tobacco tax and the provider taxes. Element 106-60, this is the internal audit staffing. The co-chair's budget would not fund those three added positions.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is an additional $500,000, the last item there before the total co-chair's adjustments, fund network of care pilot. There's a $500,000 general fund in the co-chair's budget. The network of care pilot is My understanding is that is to fund work on a series of websites, a web-based system, if you will, primarily resource and referral, some ability for clients to track their own care in terms of appointments and that kind of thing. The $500,000, I don't know what that buys. I don't know how it was priced, but it is in the co-chair's budget as an additional amount for department-wide support services. So you can see the net of the co-chair's adjustments is to add about $166,000 general fund. It reduces total funds by about $1 million. And the result is $177 million general fund in this budget and about $484 million total funds.
There's another cause for alarm, Madam Chair, in the co-chair's adjustments. 105.48 in the local health department's core capacity. To my understanding, from what I'm reading, the governor had put $5 million into support for local health departments, which included emergency preparedness. And the co-chairs basically zero out that $5 million in their budget. I'm just very concerned that we would delete capacity for counties to prepare for emergencies. We have one of the most important committees we have operating this session is the Joint Committee on Emergency Preparedness. This makes no sense. And again, it's another example of what I will not vote to support. I'll just say for the record, I won't support anything that is less than what the governor recommended in his budget. And I say that with regard to all of the Department of Human Services budgets.
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
I'm telling you, you're going to be zero, too.
I want to go back to one thing because I just found out that the equity issue is we're waiting to hear from the department whether they're going to carry $2 million over, so I will save my outrage until we find that out because the equity could be reduced to 50% depending upon what the department decides to carry over. If that's the case, I know of counties who are in the process of turning AAAs back to the state, and I've recommended that to Lane County. If they're not going to give you equity, give it back and let the state pay the full cost of whatever services are provided by AAAs, and I think that the state is a shell game. We're going to contract with the counties. We're going to give you the money. We're not going to give you the money. Then you open up the shell, and there's no money there, and the counties are stuck with the service. I'm not. You're the messenger. I'm not talking. We're waiting for the department, and I hope they're listening, and I will save my outrage until Thursday when we're supposed to find out whether or not they're going to carry over the $2 million in equity, which would bring it up to 90%. Otherwise, it's going to be closer to 50.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. But the good senator brought up a point, and it's not the messenger here, but it's also where we have a lot of contracts out there with our partners, and we have not honored those contracts that we have made with those partners. You know, I'm thinking of the DD population. We can go down this list because most of the work that we do here, we pass legislation. And then we have the department to contract with our partners out there, whether it's the county or whether it's private providers, and we ask them to do, we pay them less than what we have asked them to perform. And so it's not just the AAAs. You know, we have a situation with the DD population of where their turnover, their staff turnover over the years has been outrageous. And we say, well, why? And it's because the equity is not there between what we pay in this building and what they pay their staff in the private community. So there's a lot in here, and I don't want us to single out just one entity, because when we look at it from a broad perspective, we have the habit in this building of telling others what they should do. It's kind of like what's good for the goose is not good for the gander. And we do this consistently particularly in the Department of Human Services. And I just need to put that on record, one that who's came from here, that it is one where we aren't honorable. We're not honorable. And all of us go back and we talk to our people who are providing the services, and we scratch our heads and we say, we want you to be our partner, but oh, by the way, we're not going to pay you adequately to do so. So I need to put that on record as well.
Representative Vincent and Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we've been going through this budget, the individual lines, I very much appreciate the staff work to prepare this for us. We've been looking at all the trees in the forest of this budget, but I'm trying to look at the forest now for a moment. We've heard around the room here displeasure with various aspects of things that have been cut, either cut or reduced. I'm trying to figure out, on the bottom line, when you look at it, the co-chair's budget is, in dollars, a little bit more in the governor's recommended budget. So what's going on here? You know, we're talking about all these cuts. What's going on? I think the bottom line for me is that there were a number of cuts or reductions in the various columns to pay for one thing, the network of care pilot. Is that what's going on here? Am I interpreting this correctly? Is it about funding the network of care pilot?
I wish I could answer that. I don't know the intent, the co-chair's intent on doing that.
Madam Chair, the only point I would make is that the network of care pilot is $500,000 and the co-chair's budget adjustments is $13.7 million general fund reduction. So if their intent was to just fund the network of care pilot, these other adjustments would not have happened. But I think, as we talked about yesterday, there's really no way to track a dollar here equals a dollar over here, that the co-chairs were looking at the budget not just within Department of Human Services, but, you know, statewide.
Could I have a follow-up to clarify? I'm looking just within this one page here. The governor's recommended budget was $176.9 million, and the co-chairs was $177.1 million. That's just the portion that I was looking at there.
Madam Chair, Representative Nafisan, all I can say is that in the discussions that I was in around the department-wide support services budget, there wasn't any discussion of we want to fund this, so we have to make these cuts someplace else.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of points here. One to the issue that Senators Morissette and Winters brought out about the partnership that we do have with the counties. There's been a significant amount of work done with the counties over the interim to try to gain information in this process about how the counties use the monies that the state passes through to them for programs, because I think that both Senator Schroeder and I were very frustrated at the lack of understanding about what the counties do as the other side of this partnership and about the diversity of ways in which they do it because of the regions of the counties being so different. So in the field of human services and public safety and economic development, where most of the crossover partnership programs are, there has been a very robust working group of financial officers from the county working from folks with LFO to gain information that we can put into this system about how the partnerships work. So there's a lot more information than there used to be about what the counties add to this process, how they administer the programs, and how they provide the services. And I'm looking forward to having that introduced in the subcommittees to help us understand this partnership, because it's critical. And the systems, especially in those three budget areas, simply don't work if the state doesn't look at the counties as their partners in this business that we're in of providing these services. So I absolutely understand where you're coming from, and am looking forward to that program developing over time. And secondly, I would also like to join in thanking the analysts for doing this. but that this is only the enhancements that the governor has put in place and that the co-chairs have bounced off on. There's a whole lot more to the budget than just this information. And so we need to, I think, be aware that there are a whole lot of programs that are offered in this sector that aren't on these lists. And as we go through the deliberations, what is going on with those is going to be real interesting, because at this point we don't know if everybody automatically got CSL or how everyone else or all the other programs were treated in this process. And so this is kind of like looking at the Alps mountain range through a layer of fog. You know, you can see the high points, but you can't see what's underneath of it.
Thank you very much. We only have 30 minutes. I have a problem here, you guys.
Madam Chair, if I may, the last sheet is the Office of Private Health Partnerships.
Okay.
That we handed out yesterday.
Yes.
I believe I can go through it pretty quickly and then
okay.
turn it over to Rocky King at that point to talk more about this budget.
Very appropriate. Thank you.
Again, the last sheet is the Office of Private Health Partnerships, OPHP. It is not part of the Department of Human Services. It's a separate state agency, and the administrator's name is Rocky King, who many of you already know. And Rocky will be talking about their budget in just a few minutes. You can see on the top of this sheet, the 2005-07 legislatively approved budget of about $87.9 million total funds. This budget is really comprised of general fund, but also I've listed here on this spreadsheet three types of other funds. New tobacco tax, which comes into play with respect to the Healthy Kids program, other funds, a collection of miscellaneous other funds, and other funds which are actually federal funds that come over to the Office of Private Health Partnerships from the Department of Human Services. These are matching funds, either CHIP funds or Medicaid funds, but they are spent in this budget as other funds. You can see the essential budget level, about $92.8 million total funds. And then you see four changes to the essential budget level. Package 70 removes some empty expenditure limitation within the miscellaneous funds category of about $1.6 million. The governor's budget took a 10% reduction to the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, in other words, backed out general fund and matching federal funds, again spent as other funds, total of about $8.5 million. It added $22.6 million of new tobacco tax, along with $23.4 million of matching federal funds for the Healthy Kids program. Again, that program is comprised both of DHS, they talked about that last week in their discussion, and Rocky will talk more about this part in just a few minutes. $22.6 million tobacco tax, $23.4 million of other funds, which are actually federal funds. Package 104 would add one position for information systems development, but it would be funded internally through existing dollars. Governor's recommended budget, $119.7 million total funds, 100 positions, 92.12 FTE. The co-chairs made one adjustment to this budget, and that was to add back the 10% reduction, $2.7 million GF, along with the matching funds.
Questions? Thank you very much. Ms. King? You've been very patient, and I want to thank you for that.
I want to make one comment while he's getting prepared, and Representative Morgan pointed that piece out. Let me encourage you to go back to the governor's base budget and look at that. And if there are questions, we certainly would like for you to present those to John or to Sheila so that you can have some clarification on those and looking at what's in the government budget as well as what is in the base budget of these agencies. Okay. I'm going to close the Human Services Program Area Budget Review and open the public hearing on House Bill 5038. Mr. King.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator of the Office of Private Health Partnerships. Being passed out to you is kind of an outline of my presentation over the next day or so. It follows the book that I believe is written. All the members have the presentation book, and it follows it by section, kind of highlights those pieces that I'm going to talk about. I want to take one moment, if I may, and kind of deviate from the normal process. I've been with this agency for going on to 18 years. I have been the face of it, which has been sometimes good, sometimes bad. You have been the conscience and the spirit, giving us the legislation and the funding. And behind me, Becky Frederick, Kelly Harms, Craig Kuhn are the brains. But in those 18 years, I've never publicly acknowledged something, and I want to do it today because I know some of them are cheating and they're looking on their computers and they're listening. But about three blocks from here, there are 50 folks. File clerks, eligibility workers, marketing people, phone folks, office managers, and they're really the heart of the programs we're going to talk about today. I'm the face, somebody else is the brains, you're the spirits, but the people that make this program work, that talk to the people that are searching for health care, that have the day-to-day challenges that all of us really don't have to face, they're the ones that really make some of this work. So I should add, when you find little problems, I'm going to blame the heart, not the brains or the face, but I want to acknowledge their contributions. And one of those, Carla Messer-Holt, has been with me for almost the full 18 years. She's the office manager, and she oversees all of customer service. And in those 10 sessions that have taken place, she's never been here, but certainly she's been back at that office for the last 18 years, taking those phone calls and making sure people are served. So thank you for that 1 minute of deviation.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I really appreciate you doing that because too many times people who work, the nitty-gritty of life, every day you want to take time to say thank you, and I appreciate you for doing that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, today we have about 20 minutes, and I'm going to try to go through as much as I can, as kind of as fast as I can. Please interrupt at the discretion of the chair, obviously, if you have any questions. But I first want to start with the agency mission and organization.
Mr. King,
I'm going to start in section one of the book. Madam Chair, please.
Members, I want to make sure you're looking at the correct book. Mr. Lawrence, Eric handed out the budget book, but Mr. King is going to be using this book, which I distributed to your offices last week with a note saying, please bring it today. So we're going to be working off of this presentation book today. I think, Eric, do we have extra copies?
No,
we do not. So
sure.
Please continue to bring this tomorrow.
Yeah, mine's not.
Madam Chair, we do have some, they're not in books, but some copies together for those of you who don't have one we could perhaps provide.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, with the 18 minutes now.
Okay.
About a month ago, I think it was, I appeared before the committee for, I think, a day where we went over a lot of the details of the different programs. And I'm just going to quickly remind you, I think, if I can, what our programs are within the agency. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on those so that we can get to some of the policy and budget issues that are before you over the next couple of days. But our mission is basically to encourage and assist small businesses and individuals in making good choices and connecting up defined health insurance or health coverage through a variety of different mechanisms, including education and outreach, where we do training. We provide referral services to people who need assistance, whether it's to an agent to get coverage, whether it's to Multnomah Health Clinic to perhaps get some care where they when they don't have that coverage. And we also provide subsidies to individuals and to purchase either individual or group health benefit plans through one of our programs. So we're kind of divided between the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, which we call FEOP, which provides, again, subsidies to people that earn under 185% of the federal poverty level to purchase either individual or group coverage if they meet certain eligibility criteria. Must be uninsured for a period of 6 months, a resident of the state of Oregon, and with the Federal Reduction Act of 2005, they also must be U.S. citizens or qualified documented non-citizens. FEOP has been around since 1997, and we'll get into more detail of that in a few minutes. We also have in the program the Information Education Outreach that started almost in 1987-89, where we go out and actually train agents, train stakeholders, DHS workers, Head Start, work with employers around a variety of different state programs to make sure that we build local community knowledge base around some of the resources that are available to themselves or the people they work with or have worked for them. We also have the responsibility of certified plans for small employers. I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. We've done that twice now, started in 1989, put about 36,000 at its height in the small business pool, phased that out. We started it up in this last couple of years. Has not been a success, and I'll address that when we talk about those programs in detail. Healthy Kids plan, as proposed by the governor, is included in our budget, and part of the program is in DHS. I would say the majority of it when it comes to some of the functions around eligibility and the numbers of kids to be served, and we have kind of the private health care component of it, and also the marketing and outreach component. And I have set aside some time to really get into the Healthy Kids to talk about our role, especially around the marketing and outreach and the challenges that that faces. If you look on page 2 of section 1, there's something about our agency that a lot of people don't understand. It gets kind of confusing. When we had Mr. Britton look at this, he said, "I don't understand it. I hope you're going to explain that chart there." Since 1989, through an interagency agreement, there's been really two or three small little programs and different agencies and their own agency that have really worked and shared the administrative and program structure. And those include, besides FEOP and the certified plans and the information, education and outreach, also the high-risk pool, OMIP. I also serve as the administrator of OMIP. Also, the Senior Health Insurance Assistance Program, SHEBA. We serve as the administrator for that. So we provide really a coordination of a variety of programs, some of those located within the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and some of those in a standalone agency as the Office of Private Health Partnerships is. When people talk about administrative efficiencies, when you're small programs and you need web design services, having one staff member in every program doesn't make sense. And so we're able really to share the kind of administrative and program burdens among three agencies because we're just not very big. And that, we think, has saved the state dollars and saved, ultimately, our clients, giving them better service because we're able to pass people off among those programs, too, as they have certain needs. That's kind of our agency mission and how we're organized. I'll start on Section 2 now to give a little bit more detail detail about these programs. FEOP. Well, FEOP started in 1987. We currently have about 15,000 people enrolled in the program. I would like to call your attention to really pages 4 and 5 of the appendix, and kind of get into, some of the details and help you understand who we serve and what it costs. If you're on page 4, you will see the subsidy chart for 2007, and page 5 are different poverty levels for 2007 as it relates to family size and income. FEOP serves those people under 185% of the federal poverty level. It provides subsidies based on those poverty level anywhere from 95% of the premium to 50% of the premium, both group and individuals. For group coverage, we pay a portion of the premium if they have a group plan that meets a federal benchmark. And in the individual market, if they don't have group coverage available, we have 6 or 7 carriers that offer a plan that has a reasonable, what we call a federal benchmark, that meets that benchmark, and they're able to enroll in that. Group market is the challenging market for a variety of reasons. First of all, when you pay a 50% subsidy at the higher end, that is above 170% of the federal poverty level, that still creates a very difficult situation for many families to afford group coverage. Secondly, it's difficult because in the group market we see, especially in small businesses, a declining number of businesses offering group coverage. So we're really trying to go out there and expand the ability for people to buy group coverage when businesses, because of the economic conditions we've faced over the last 3 or 4 years and the increased cost of health care, we've seen them actually drop some of that coverage.
At one point, we wouldn't, I think now, you know, clarify for me, if you will, we did not allow you to market. Are you now able to market, and did we fund such effort?
Yes, Madam Chair, actually, if you were. Let's see if we can.
I can wait until you get there if we're going to get there.
I think there is a specific chart that I would like to show you, and I'm trying to find where it is. Not in front of me here. I think it gets back into when we get to the budget. But let me kind of, Madam Chair, tell you where we are with FEOP right now. We were able to remain open until such time as, if you recall, the decision by the legislature in special session removed a portion of the money through a special, they set aside a special appropriation in 2005 and released a portion of that through the Legislative Emergency Board, I believe, $2.9 million, had us hold off any marketing or new enrollments after a period of time after that decision. There was a remaining $1.1 million in the Special Appropriations account that went to the Department of Human Services to help fund an expansion of the eligibility under the CHIP program from 6 months to 12 months. So we kind of were on a glide path to go down. There were 3 things that happened. First of all, when you stop marketing and all of a sudden our termination rate was a little bit higher than what we anticipated. In other words, the glide path came down a little bit faster. But what really faced us was a dilemma that we had not expected, was one of the major insurance companies in this state decreased premiums by about 16% in the individual market. And it happened to be the one that had the largest number of people, almost a third or a quarter to a third of our people that were enrolled with that particular carrier. The high risk pool, which has a large number of folks, about 14,000 out of the approximate 15,000 we have enrolled, OMIP had to follow suit because they based their premiums on the average in the individual market. So we saw all of a sudden a decrease in the cost per insured come down. And Kelly, what page is that chart on? And I can.
Are you in the enrollment?
In the enrollment, please. So if you turn to Section 3, page 1, You'll see we reached a peak around January 05. Or excuse me, 06, started the glide path down, and then towards the end of last year, we became aware of the price decreases in the market, the termination rate that was coming down a little bit faster, so we decided to go out and open the market. Now, we had a waiting list of about 20,000 folks, so we haven't marketed in the sense we've announced publicly that we're open, you know, everybody come in. What we've done, though, is start working that waiting list to try to get that population back to a level. We're budget-controlled, not people-controlled. So if those 15,000 people are less expensive to us, then in order to expand our budget, we have to be at 15,500 people or whatever it may be. So it's the dollar that controls it, and the people we just try to match to those dollars. But when we saw that decrease, it was significant. We'll talk about maintenance of effort here in a minute. We had projected a 9% increase. The whole state has been seeing 9, 10, 12% increases. All of a sudden, we saw a 10 or 15% decrease. So we had a 25% gap in terms of what we thought we were going to spend versus what we were actually spending. And that allowed us to open up the market here about 4 or 5 months ago to start getting new folks in. Let me explain why that's important, and skipping around a little bit, but it has to do with the maintenance of effort. When we made a deal with the feds to get federal funds, they required that we had to expand about $40 million over a five-year period of state funds. I'm sure I'm right on this, Becky. $40 million over a five-year period in order to receive the federal fund dollars. Not number of people we serve, but the dollars, state dollars. We right now are projected to be about about 1.5 million short of that if we took no action. In other words, the market came down, we just stayed where we are. Part of the reason why we're opening that back up is that we need to get the population up to expend the state dollars, so basically, in my words, we don't get in trouble with the feds. We made a commitment, we're going to spend 40, and we've got to do that. So we're trying to build up the population in the program over the next 6 months. We have until, I think, October to expend that $40 million. And that creates some problems, because what you're doing is you're spiking. And so you come up and say we put another 2,000 people in, and then all of a sudden you've met that maintenance of effort, but now you have to live within your budget, so you'll have to stay closed for the next 6, 12 months and basically come down. And when you look at on page 2 of section 3, you'll see that we anticipate getting above 16,000 by July 07, and we may have to go a little bit higher after that, but you'll see that our market and the top projected FEOP enrollment for 2007-09 is kind of a steady decline. We'll average approximately 12,000, but we'll end under 10,000. We'll start at 16. And that's caused because of that peak that we've got to build up to for the maintenance of effort. Questions on the
letters? Rocky, can you comment, thank you, Madam Chair, can you comment on what penalties could occur if you don't reach your maintenance of effort?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, no state, I guess, has ever, I'm looking at Mr. Britton on this because we were part of the discussions, but I don't believe any state has ever not met it, or if they received a penalty, or if they did not meet it. There must have been some negotiations that took place. Our sense is if we were to fall short, say we fall short 500,000 or 750,000, that DHS and the governor's office and a variety of us would get together and sit down with the federal government and say, let's negotiate. The program's still here. We're going to still continue to expend the funds. It may not be within that specific 5 year, maybe 5 years, 3 months, but our position is going to be the heart and soul of us is here trying to meet that. And it was market forces and the last 6 months here that have put us in that position. So doesn't give you a specific answer, Senator Winters, but we just don't know.
I raise that because maintenance of effort is a big issue, not only for you, but also Department of Education and some of the others where we have matching ties or we have made some commitments to the federal government that if they give us X, we will do Y. And I just needed to put that on record for those who don't understand what maintenance of effort is. And states are under obligation to meet those federal requirements because we have utilized their dollars.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, technically they could ask you to pay back. I doubt that would happen at this stage, but it would require some negotiations. Madam Chair, it's kind of entering the time, and do you want to...
Well, I think this is a good time if anybody has any lasting questions, so we won't, it doesn't make sense for you to go into another area just to get started in 2 minutes. And so, are there questions or things that are good for the order before we close today for the award day?
Mr. King, what would an additional $1 million bring to your outreach efforts? What would be the potential for bringing a new...
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, right now, with the limited dollars, bringing the $1 million for the FEOP program would not... It would be something we wouldn't ask, or it wouldn't make a lot of sense because we don't have a capacity. Now, if you didn't have a cap, or you said, here's enough money for 50,000 people rather than 15,000, you betcha we could go out and do that. But the reality is this program, one of the attractiveness of it is that it does have a cap on it. It is just not an unlimited money grabber, to say. So bringing extra marketing dollars at this point is not an answer. We can get the people with what we've got. The issue is there's more people than money that we have, which is true for all services.
Madam Chair, is there more people in the individual market than what you have than in the group market?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, I'll go through some of the statistics which are in the appendix in Section 2 tomorrow. We have about 6,000 people in the group market. And about, I think it's a little under 9,000, about 9,000 people in the individual market. When you look at this population, the biggest need, very frankly, is in the individual market. These folks aren't working for a whole bunch of businesses that provide provide insurance. If you look at our waiting list, it has always been closed, when it's been closed, to the individual market only. We've always been open to the group. Finding a group, folks, is important. They're out there, but they're one here and one there. With the individual market, there's just bucket loads of them out there, but we just don't have the services for them, or the openings.
Mr. Bowden?
Members and Madam Chair and members, just wanted to remind you that tomorrow we have public testimony scheduled for this particular budget. I don't anticipate that will take the whole time, at which time Mr. King may continue, but just wanted to let you know again we have public testimony scheduled tomorrow.
Thank you very much for today's presentation. See you tomorrow.